Okay. Without further ado.
Okay.
The shir was prepared. Lili Nishmas Devora Bas Nochum. The Shama Shav Aliyah. The, Hanukkah, you know, even though it's a mitzvah saseh, she'as man groma, time-related positive commandment, women are chayv in it, she'afin hayu boso anes. What's just very interesting is that they have a kesher to Hanukkah, no less than a male, which is, by the way, not the case in, as far as Ashkenazim are concerned, as far as Mikra Megillah, you know, Ashkenazim hold, even on a one-to-one basis, a woman cannot be motzi a man in Mikra Megillah, because they're not equally as chayiv, you know. But Hanukkah, that's not the halacha. Equally as chayiv, nothing wrong with the woman of the household lighting the menorah for the whole family. One could talk that if she's the breadwinner, maybe it might be apropos for her, because everyone's really samach al shulchana. But whatever. Don't quote me on that. That's another discussion. But it's more than that. They have a halacha that made it into the Shulchan Aruch that they're not supposed to be doing malacha while the candles are burning. There's something special for them that the men don't have. So we have to research. Now and of course in the same place in Shulchan Aruch it mentions the minhag of eating milchiks on Hanukkah, and this leads into why women have this special connection to Hanukkah, that there was the mice of Yehudis. Right, the story of how she had dinner with a general was much less dramatic or traumatic than what Esther had to go through in Purim. Had dinner with a general, and that's all it took. You know, he fell asleep at dinner, and she cut his head off and spiked it on a spear. Right, and because of that story, you know, the women have this special connection to Hanukkah. Yeah, that's what it's brought about. Now, the amazing thing is, and here's it's just mind blowing, is that according to most authorities, our people, our historians, Jewish historians, the story of Yehudas did not happen during this time of Hanukkah. It's not historically connected.
When did it happen?
Right. Most place it before. Some make it even to say it was even as early as the first temple period. And some place it later. And these are, like I said, in our sources, you know. And and there are those that say even what there is in one of our sources, that a daughter of Matisyahu also had this something like that, you know, assassinated a general. Even that story was not Yehudas. It was a different woman. You know, the story of Yehudas, you know, according to most, like I said, most, not everybody, but most of our historians say it didn't happen at the time of Hanukkah at all, which means it's just it's spiritually connected, not in any way, historically or in, it wasn't a causality of the military victory of the Chashmonaim, which is amazing. That's amazing. Meaning our people who say that women have our chayiv in their Hanukkah because of Yehudas, those same people readily admit it may, you know, most of them, it didn't even happen during Hanukkah. So that's amazing. It means that the connection to the story of Yehudas is purely spiritual, a spiritual parallel, something which we'll get into and we'll research. There's nothing... there's nothing that's authoritative. There's a lot of different midrashim. It's one of these, and the Christians have it in their Bible. even in our story, like in our conflicting midrashim, some of them, put the story in Bais Rishon, some put it later. Some say, she was not related to the Chashmonaim at all. She was from Shevet Shimon, according to, the version printed in the Sefer Chemdas Hayom, not even related to the Chashmonaim. What?
Well,
okay, fine.
Not too many of them, anyway.
Right. Yeah, okay. There's a. So the story, the source I read was from the Sefer Chemdas Hayom. I forget where he took it from, but it's like saying in the. I don't know. There's. It's very the connection to Hanukkah is not historically. It's not, the Mishnah Berurah assumes it's connected historically, and she was a daughter of Matisyo. But other sources, other midrashim say, it wasn't related at all, and may not have been for that time period. But nonetheless, women are chayiv in their Hanukkah because of the story of Yehudas. That's the amazing thing. It's not like the people say otherwise say that that's not the reason. No, it is the reason, even though it didn't happen at the same time, which means that the connection is totally spiritual in nature.
Does anybody know a name, if it wasn't Yehudas and it was a daughter of Matisyahu who
went... No. Her name was Yehudas, whoever she was. Her name was Yehudas. Her name was Yehudas, yeah. Who her father was, each medrash said something else. Right.
Maybe right. You're talking about Esther.
What? No, it's not. That's the point. We're going to go analyze, according to all different stories, the difference between her and Esther, which really, as we're going to show, shows the difference between Hanukkah and Purim. Be'ezer Hashem. What these two different, the different experience of these two different women is perfectly parallel to the difference between Hanukkah and Purim, as we will show, Be'ezer Hashem. Another interesting thing to note about the halachas of Hanukkah is that they are house-oriented. Meaning, not only is the Iker Hadin that it's only one menorah per household, that which Ashkenazim light, the boys light their own, that's only Hidur mitzvah. It's Ner Ish U Beso, but not just Beso in terms of household. If you don't have a house, if you're homeless, if you live in the street, you don't light. Yeah. You don't light. The halacha of Ner Hanukkah is like mezuzah. Right. It's like mezuzah. It's on the house. I mean, not just you light opposite the mezuzah, when you light outside, but if you don't have a house, you don't light, and that's why there's a halacha in Hilchos Hanukkah that the roes, someone who sees Ner Hanukkah, could also make shasan nisim. So that bracha was instituted for the homeless, because they don't light. That's at least, again, I'm not taking responsibility, but this is the way many poskim say it. I mean, it's already in the Rishon, it's in the Tosfos already. That the mitzvah of Hanukkah is to be likened to like the mitzvah of makkah on the roof or mezuzah on the door. It's a mitzvah, even though it's an action, but nonetheless, it's on the house. Right, Nerishu Beso, literally. I just quickly mentioned that. Therefore, that being the case, one has to be very careful if you find yourself in candle lighting time in someone else's house, and you're not eating there, you're not spending the night there, you can't light Hanukkah candles there either. If you have a seudah there, so you're joining the household for, then it's your house. If you're not having a seudah there, just a cup of coffee, so time is there, you can't light and be yotzei. You have to light. You light where you live, right?
It's half an hour
is the Iker Shir. It's that they do that because when we light early, we call it like Erev Shabbos. So it has to burn till a half an hour after Tzeis.
This is kind of like the shir that you gave in Makom. So what you're saying here is that if a person eats a suda somewhere else or sleeps it for a night, so for that temporary period of time,
it's his house.
Made that his
makom. That's right. It is his. No, it has to be a house, not makom.
No, but it's still.
You have to have a roof over your head.
Makom, doesn't it? I mean, makom is, well, is a place.
No, bias. Bias. Tonight we're talking about bias.
All right, okay.
House. We have to understand why that is, that Ner Hanukkah is really sort of like mezuzah. The Ramazim to Hanukkah already start in Parshas Vayishlach. Yaakov went back, Rashi says, for Pachim Ktanim. Went back for small jugs, everyone, it's already, it's ancient, that already people close to Rashi's time, the Shlach Kodesh, it's a remez. That small jug that he went back for was a precursor of that small jug that wasn't defiled. So I want to talk about that encounter for a second. What happened in that week's parsha? So Yaakov, he kicked the backside of a malach, right? But when he comes to Esav, right, in the flesh, right? He bows and he's subservient, and also ahead of time he sent them that elaborate gift. I would have done it the other way around. Right? I mean, Chazal tell us that Malach, even though they're talking full size, but nonetheless, you know, Malach is as big as one third of the globe. You know, it's an allusion to the type of power that it has, right? You know, dealing with the spiritual, that's infinitely more powerful than the physical. Over there he goes, combat, right? Esav in a body, right, is very subservient. So much so that Chazal in the Medrash Rabbah are critical. It was just too subservient. It was too much groveling. It was too much chanifa. You know,
who says that?
The Medrash Rabbah. You know, I mean, there's the Tzar says something else, that he did it because he sent the gift with the kavanas of the Seer HaMishtaleach. You know, we spoke about that once, but the...
Right.
The Medrash Rabbah is very, it's like it was just, you know, Koam Avdecha Yaakov, Avdecha Yaakov. So, and that's the Esav in the body. And then the guardian angel, the archangel, he creams. Who done the whole thing the other way around? You know, you don't mess with an angel. You know, a guy, a busser vadam, you know, flesh and blood, you could take him. You know, so you have to understand, you know, what was Yaakov Avinu thinking? Right? But, the parsha beforehand, something very interesting, that Yaakov Avinu has his vision at Har Moriah, sees the ladder, you know, and the angel's going up and down. He wakes up, Ma'anor Mokum, Ze Ein Ze Kim, Beis Elokim, Veze Shara Shemaim. There's a house of the Lord. So the Chazal tell us right there on the spot that with this he outdid Avram and Yitzchak. Avram called it a har, called it a mountain, Har Hashem Yiroah. Yitzchak called it a soda field. Yitzchak lasuach basoda. Yaakov Koro Bias, he called it a house. And in that merit that he called it a house, so the Beis HaMikdash HaShlishi that will never be destroyed is going to always be called Nalo Beis Elokei Yaakov. The Navi Yeshaya says, you know, we go to the house of the Lord of Yaakov, because you know, he's the first one to call it a house. I don't get it. Avram called it a mountain because it was a mountain. Har Moriah. Yitzchak called it a sada, right, a field, because it was a field. As the Navi says, Lochein Tzion Sada Techarasha, the Temple Mount would be plowed over like a field. It was a sada. Right? Yaakov called it a house. That was crazy. There was not two bricks, one on top of another there. It was an empty lot. And that's called his greatness. He called it a house, and that's how we outdid Avraham and Yitzchak. Like they were saying what they saw, and he was saying, you know, it doesn't fit. He was sleeping out in the open. Yeah? So if they're saying, you know, what was this higher perception that he had, that he called it a bias? So now, flash forward in history, you know, the Greeks, you know, when they took control of the Temple Mount, they could have torched the Beis HaMikdash. They didn't. When the Babylonians got in there, they burnt it to the ground. When the Romans got in there, they burnt it to the ground. The Greeks, they could have. They didn't. There's something on their mind.
Wait 1 second, I'm sorry. Who's blocking the driveway? Gray Lexus.
Say it again.
Gray Lexus blocking the driveway.
You took my keys.
You don't have a gray Lexus.
Tell me you took my keys so I can drive.
Yeah, she does.
Now, what are they thinking? You know, they could have torched it and they didn't, huh? And they got this hang up with the oil. You know, even though Chazal puts all the emphasis on the oil. You know, like we say in Mosur, v'timu kol hashmanim. And that's a little bit strange. I'll tell you why. Because we find elsewhere in Chazal that once they were in there, they did all sweeping damage. They didn't torch it. But they did do damage. They talk about it. We find sugyas in Gemara. Avnei mizbeach sheshiktsum anshe yavan. That they chipped at the mizbeach, and there are stones that had to be replaced. They chipped at the floor, and there were stones that. Because I'll talk about how renovations were necessary, because it's not like they took good care of it when they were there. But you know, we put all the emphasis on the fact that you know the oil, and there's one jug. Oil is everything. Right, we're totally ignoring the fact that the korbanos were not offered while they were there. They did damage to the mizbeach also. It's something that, you know, there's a as much as they did damage, that the focus is the oil, and the triumph is in the oil. All right. The miracle was in the Neros HaMa'aracha with the Karbonis. They had to wait. There was no nace as far as, you know, that, you know, even though the Mizbeach was damaged and put out of use, they had to wait till the renovations were done. There's something about the menorah. You know, they had a nace that they were able to resume that immediately. Going back to the difference between the story of Esther and the story of Yehudas. There's they're not parallel at all, the two stories. You know, Esther, of course, we have only one account of the story, and she is stuck with Ahasuerus. And even after the nace, you know, and she causes the whole Vinath Ochu, she's still stuck there. Stuck till the end of her life.
But he died not so long afterwards. I heard a year or two, so why was she stuck there till the end of her life? I mean, she couldn't go back to Mordechai.
Yeah,
but why that's called
stuck, as far as we know. Yeah. Yeah. She never, you know, never made it out of there. Never made it out of there. The right, Yehudas, never was, as it were, never even got captured in the. Let alone, by our account, she wasn't defiled in any way. Just had dinner with the guy, and she cut his head off. You know, and Esther never did any such thing. Could have. Yael was defiled. Right? Yeah, it's very befitting to really look into that difference that, Esther had never left captivity. And the nace happens, from within captivity, and the captivity is, her liberation wasn't part of the nace.
Right.
But, whereas Yehudas, took control of the situation, in a way that really caused the whole army to go into panic, the invading army. Right. So when you look at the difference between the nace of Hanukkah and Purim, you see that the what these two women went through is perfectly parallel to the difference between these two miracles. The reason we don't say Hallel on Purim, as great of a miracle as it was, the Gemara says, is Akati Avdi da Achashverosh. We were still slaves of Achashverosh. Yeah. Right, the amazing thing is that geopolitically nothing changed. Slaves of Achashverosh before, slaves of Achashverosh afterwards. Still in Gauls. Right. Because what the Nes of Purim represents is that even when Am Yisrael is in Golos, the Shekhinah is there with them, and not just with them, but Shechinta Begalusa, the Shekhinah is mamish incarcerated with us, and that is what Esther represents. Esther Hamalka represents the Shekhinah. Shekhinah Kayadua is the Nukva, the Nekeva. That's what it says. Bayom Ashlishi Vatubash Esther Malchus. Love, so Chazal says, Love Shal Ruach HaKodesh. The divine spirit dwelt upon her. Also, Vatubash Malchus. Malchus Kayadu is the meter called Shechina, and that meter is also called Nukva. It's called the Nekeva. In Golos, Mamash, stuck in the house of Achashverosh. And the amazing thing is that with all that, and Mamash incarcerated, she calls the shots. And that's what it means, Shechinta Begalusa. We talk about when Am Yisrael's in Golos, the Shechinah is in Golos with us, that the Shechinah is mamish in captivity. But since the Shechinah rules the world, that's like the prisoner who's in jail, and he knows how to manipulate the warden to get whatever he wants, but the warden still thinks he's in control. I'm the warden, I lock him in his cell, right? I'm in control, but he knows how to, he gets whatever he wants from within his prison cell.
That's like Yosef.
Yes, it's like Yosef, except that Yosef, became the unofficial warden.
Right.
Yeah, unofficial warden. But this is it's less than that. You know, still, you know, ad chatzi amalchus, Achashverosh tells her. And she gets the half that she wants. Right? She still gets the half, you know, he said, I mean, half for me, half for you. She gets the half that she wants. Right? That the nes of Purim is as such that... you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us within the Golus. So we were saved, but it wasn't Geula. We were saved, but we weren't redeemed. And that's why we don't say Hallel. This is a Nes Nister of very great proportions, but this is also the tremendous Simcha that, you know, even in the darkest times, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is with us. Even in the darkest times. Right? But you can only see that once a year. You see it on Purim. And when you see it, you know, you don't see it in your right mind. You know, it's the... no, seriously, that's Ad Delo Yoda, Ben Oram Baruch Mordechai, that everything bad is for the good also. There's no way to wrap your consciousness around it. You get to it in the super consciousness, you know, after you put the regular consciousness to sleep. You know, it's above das. It's not, you know, that even the bad times are for the good is not something that... we could wrap our heads around. That's why the whole celebration of the Nes is to go out of the mind. That is now, you know, and you have the special Siyata Dishmaya, only see it once a year. But when you see it once a year, you know, you see it fully. And that's why it's a Yom Tov in the sense that, you know, there's eating and drinking is a part of it. It's physically manifest. Right. Hanukkah, you know, that's what Purim is all about. So that's what I mean. Esther never leaves the house of Achashverosh. Just it's revealed once a year that from that lowest point, the Shekhinah is running the whole world. That even when the Shekhinah is in Golus, from that lowest point, still running the world. Right. And once here, you could see it. Right. And when you see it, you see the whole story. But to see the whole story, you can't be conscious, you know, because it's. There's no way that the regular mind could wrap its head around this. All right? Hanukkah is totally different. All right, Hanukkah was that there was a change in the geopolitical situation. Right? The Greeks are forced out, and Am Yisrael regains their independence. The question is like this. It was a spit in the bucket of history. Why? How long did the whole thing go? Between the Nes of Hanukkah until we went into this long and bitter Golus that we're in.
180 years?
Huh? Yeah, roughly. Rambam, that took a little bit over 200 years. The whole thing. Okay. The whole thing, you know. From the miracle of Hanukkah, you know, till Churban HaBayis, the whole thing was just 200 years. Well, they do, right? And those 200 years, anyone who knows our history, they were terrible 200 years. You know, first the civil wars between the Hashmonaim and then Hordas. Yeah, it wasn't rosy. It wasn't rosy. The whole thing was 200 years, right? And we're in Golus 10 times that amount. You know, it's a big deal. Been a war of independence and you have an empire that have lasted 1,000 years or a few hundred. It's 200 years, the whole thing. Right? So what type of liberation was it? You know, the Roman occupation started not too long afterwards. Because in the civil wars, they brought in Roman mercenaries, you know, they brought in Pompey, that was the whole, yeah. So even the 200 years till Churban HaBayis, loss of real independence happened, you know, not too long afterwards. You know. What?
They had 63 years.
Yeah. So when you say that Hanukkah is different than Purim, that's why we say Hallel, because there was a change in geopolitical situation. For how long? But the idea is like this, you know, going back to the obsession that the Greeks had with the Beis HaMikdash. And this relates back to Yaakov Karo Bais. They were obsessed with that house. Right, the Beis HaMikdash, which Yaakov originally, you know, said, this place is not. You know, it's not a mountain, it's not a field, it's a house. Right. Well, what does a house represent?
You know. Like you're the source, your source, no? So everybody returns to their home, always their home. So it's like the source, the origin.
Is there a source? House represents two things, meaning there's right represents two things, meaning it's two things, but one is two ideas that one follows the other, right? First and foremost, it creates the difference between inside and outside, right? No, but not just separate. Between 2 yards, you can make a fence, and we're going to get back to the Yaakov also later in Parshas Vayetzeh built a fence between him and Lavan, Yigar Sadusa, right? You could draw borders, but both sides of the borders are called outside. You know, right? It's just my territory, my yard, your yard, my chutzner, your chutzner. Right? That's a house is there's between inside and outside. A dimensional difference. Right? It's not just like a fence that cordons off one area from another area. They both are called outside. Just is the right side of the outside and the left side of the outside. My turf, his turf. You know, the house creates this between inside and outside. Right? And what does that mean? Right?
Plane.
That's correct. It's a different plane. So what's inside and what's outside? What do we know is inside and outside? It's the difference between body and soul.
Right.
It's between body and soul. Right? A body on the outside. Right? What's on the overt level? And we say inside. Inside is a soul. All right. The difference between the spiritual and the physical is the difference between outside and inside. And it's not just as we're, where each one dwells, but this parallel follows through also in ideas and ideology. Chazal referred to the sciences as chochmos chitzonios. External wisdoms. Biology, chemistry, physics, chochmos chitzonios, external wisdoms. Right? Because what are you measuring? You're measuring what something looks like. What's science? Science, we take measurements and we notice that the body works this way. We take, record our measurements, and that makes up all the rules of biology. We record our measurements of how energy works. And that's what's called the rules of physics, right? The laws of physics, right? So we watch how chemicals interact. We record all those findings. That's what we call chemistry. It's just taking, stock, right, of all these observations that anyone could see. So that's what's external.
Right.
What's internal?
Why it's there and what that imposes on us.
So I'll tell you, but let's just make it a little bit simpler. Values.
Right.
The right and versus the wrong. You can't see it in a microscope. You can't see it in a telescope. The sciences you see in the microscope and in the telescope, right? Anything that we called a science, go prove it. Well, you measure it, you see it, right? The right versus the wrong, the issues of values, right? Ideology. Where is it? Can't see it. It's invisible. That's pnimius. And that's where the Torah differs from the sciences. And we call, in our jargon, Torah is pnimius, and the sciences are chitzonius. In Torah, we could find the answers to the difference between the right and wrong. Values, what's really more important? You can't see importance of you can't see priorities in a microscope or a telescope. Like, what's more important than what? That's invisible. That belongs purely to the realm of ideas, the pure realm of ideas. Now, we believe that we're not speculating and not making it up. We have a Torah. That's the gift of a Torah, that these things that cannot be seen in a microscope or a telescope, HaKadosh Baruch Hu revealed to us and dispelled our moral blindness and give us the Torah. That's why the Torah is called Or. Right? Torah is a Kiner Mitzvah Torah Or in Aramaic, Torah is called Oiraisa. Right? Ne'er mitzvah Torah or. Why is Torah called light? Very simply, because it enables us to see things that the eye can't see. The flesh eye is morally blind. Right? The flesh eye can only see, you know, what things look like. The issues of importance and values and priorities and the right from wrong. None of that is anything that the eye can see. And the Torah illuminates, you know, opens our eyes. Gives us the moral vision, right? So those ideas as the right versus the wrong, priorities and values, don't live, they're not in the same dimension as the sciences, which are visible to the eye. And that means that, you know, these ideas are in primis, they're on the inside. Just like I can't see what's going on behind the wall, I don't see what's going on the inside. In your neighbor's yard, you can see what's going on, you just got to get the right angle, right? You know, that's all, right? You can't see. If you go up to the second floor of your house, from there you can see, right? Right? You know, it's on the outside. It's only a matter of, you know, you don't know what's going on the inside, right? The invisible, right? The realm of pure ideas is what we call it. It's on the inner dimensions of reality, right? Right, but there's, yeah, but that's the first one. Right? Right. I can only get to the second after I finish the first. Okay, right, the second idea is like beso zu ishto, right, is the idea that house is where you live, right? And that's amazing, right? You know, you live, and then, of course, intimate life can only be, you know, indoors, right? Intimacy and full connection, right? So when Yaakov Avinu called the Temple Mount a bias, he was making two declarations, right? First of all, you know, what's here is just onto a league onto its own. It's not part of the outside space. Ahar is part of the great outdoors. Asada is part of the great outdoors, right? Saying that it's a house puts it on a whole nother level. That's what it means that it's kodesh. Kodesh means that it's separate. Right. Right. But then there's another bias, is that we're going to live here. Am Yisrael lives with this. Am Yisrael's nizdavig, clings to this, like beso zu ishto. So one of the Tanoim took credit. He says, me'olam lo karasi li'ishti ishti. I never called my wife, never. El ishti besi. I always called my wife my house. He took credit for that, so that was big on his part. No. Give it a proper appropriate that a man's wife is his home. That's where he lives. Right, and the marriage is called kiddushin. Right, holiness is a separate space. And that's when she's mekudeshes, she's osur on every other man, special for him, sealed off from everyone else. And that's why also, interestingly enough, this parallel finds so in the halachas of the Beis HaMikdash, the Heichal is called Kodesh, that's the inner chamber, right, where the Yisraelim can't walk on the Kohanim, and that's called, you know, it's called Bifnim, and it's called Kodesh. And the Kodesh HaKadoshim is called Lifnai V'Lifnim. So it's called doubly holy, it's also called doubly inside. All runs parallel. What's holy is on the inside. It's all Lifnai v'lifnim. The Kodesh Kodesh is called both Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it's called Lifnai v'lifnim. The Eichal is called Kodesh, and it's called Bifnim, as opposed to the Azara that's called Bachutz. Right? Yeah, of course, relatively Bachutz. The Eichal is Bifnim, and it's called Kodesh. The Kodesh Kodesh is called Kodesh HaKadoshim, and it's called Lifnai v'lifnim. Double in. Inside within inside. And that's what drives the Greeks crazy. They had thought that they had reached the pinnacle of human perfection. Right? That the Hellenistic culture is the difference between man and barbarian. Right? Whoever is cultured, as Hellenist culture, that's human. right? And they consider the unkoyel, anyone who doesn't have that, barbarians. That's in all their writings. You know, culture is everything man needs to attain perfection. Right? And then the Jews come with the magic, they've got something else. Something else that's, you know, on a whole nother level. It's inner space. And we say everything about what they did right, you know, and if they got their, if they, with the assumption they got their sciences right, we call that all chokhmos chitzonius. That's all on the outside. That's on the outside. We have something on the inside. They don't have anything on the inside. Drives them crazy. So they do break in entry. It's an amazing, and we say this in Mosul, ufortzu chomos mila, they burst in. So now, you know, the Mosul is not just being poetic, it's actually reflecting a Mishnah in Meseches Midos, right, that Har HaBayis had a fence around it called the Sorag. They broke in 13 places. And why 13? Gematria Echad, I don't know if we'll get to that today. No, they broke in, they made 13 breaches. Right? And Chazal were metaken after those breaches were repaired that every time you face that breach, you got to bow. You have to bow. Why? All right. They were trying to make a statement. Our wisdom reaches the same place your Torah reaches. So we could be in there also. They didn't want to torch the Har HaBayis. There's no victory in that. The statement they wanted to make was, our culture reaches where you reach. You don't got nothing over us. They were breaking in. But that's break in entry, literally. Trying to break in from chitzonius to pnimius. They're good at the external stuff. Right? What is it? The glory, that's Greece? That's all. That's the external. They're very good at that. But they want to have the inner stuff also. And that's what their whole transgression is summed up in the Mosul Ufortzu Chomazai, break in entry, breaking into the house. They're trying to make a statement, our stuff reaches, you know, same place you reach. Right? They don't want to torch it to the ground. They want to make a statement, we're inside also. Right? What does bowing represent? Right? The line doubles over on itself. You can't continue forward. This is where they try to make a line, say with our logic, with our culture, we can reach, you know, this line of thinking and line of culture can go. No. Bowing represents the line doubles over on itself. It's only true up to. That's what bowing represents. Bending over doesn't go any further. The outside stays on the outside. Later. That's over. Short on time. So now, that's the statement that they're making. And parallel to that, it's what they, you're no better than we are. You're not connected to anything bigger. So that's what the Medrash says. V'choshech zu Yavon. The darkness is Yavon. Because they wanted to say that their secular culture is, you know, as in is all the enlightenment a person needs, and we say that that's darkness. Right? We say it's darkness. You still remain morally blind, with all the science and all the beauty and all the aesthetics. You still remain equally in darkness vis-a-vis morality and the right and wrong. Choshech zu yavan. But the Medrash goes on to say, but hichshicha einayim shliso. You know, Begzera, She'amru lahem, Kisva Karen Ashar, Ein lachem chelek b'okay. So it went further than that. It said, "Want you engrave on the one of the legislators? What engrave on the horn of an ox? You have no chelek b'okay Yisrael. Right? You're not dvek in a. You have no dvekus in a Kodesh Baruch Hu. House represents dvekus. Over there, you could have intimate life." We don't just have the inner chamber of reality and the inner wisdom, but house also means, you know, clinging. Like chelok al neshamas, chelok al kam mimal, clings to God. You know, v'dovak b'ishto v'hoyo l'basar echad, part of an integrated whole, right on Karen Ashor, ein lachem chelok b'elkei Yisrael. You have no connection to God. You know, I mean, if we don't, then you don't either. That's why it's defiling the Beis HaMikdash. You say there's a bias, there's inner space, an inner wisdom, and a intimacy with the divine that we don't have. No. You know, we're going to break in there. We're going to establish a presence there to prove you're not any better than us. And they may as well, right on the Keren HaShor. Why a Keren HaShor? What are you alluding to? Chet HaEgo. Chet HaEgo. Listen, buddy. You know, they're sticking it in our face. You know, if there's any truth to that, that, you know, by Yitzias Mitzrayim and Matan Torah, you became so close and so intimate. How, you know, only 40 days later, yeah, after Mamad Har Sinai, you make an ego, sticking in our face. You know, clinging to God, clinging to the divine. All right. But did everyone succumb to the Chet HaEgo? Of the male folk, you know, there was only 3,000, but they had the tacit approval of everyone else that kept quiet. But the women not. The women did not. You know, they had to forcibly take the earrings away. You know, it's, Chazal, you know. Chazal assumed it had nothing to do with a woman being attached to her jewelry. It's not, you know, it's really, was out of, right? Out of love for HaKadosh Baruch Hu, that had to be forcibly wrested from them. They didn't participate in Chet HaEgo. Right. That's right. So now here's the thing, right? Rashi says in Parshas Pikudei, Ela Pikudei HaMishkan, Mishkan HaEdus. The accountings of the Mishkan of Testimony. What's the testimony? Edus Shemochol HaKadosh Baruch Hu Al Chet HaEgo. The Beis HaMikdash represents that God forgave us for the sin of the golden calf. Because, like, seemingly the golden calf represents we broke off our connection to God. So God makes a statement, makes a bias, and we live there together with Him, intimate with Him. That's the statement that it's in the Mishkan, right? That's the statement that Chet HaEgo, you know, HaKadosh Baruch Hu forgave it, and we put things right with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. They want to make a comeback to the Chet HaEgo, right? So Kisva Keren HaShor, but the Beis HaMikdash represents forgiveness for the Chet HaEgo. No, we're going to defile it, right? It represents that as HaKadosh Baruch Hu put it, you know, behind us. No. We're going to defile it. This symbol, that's where you got out of the Chet HaEgo. We're going to defile it. You're just fooling yourselves. You never made it past Chet HaEgo. So what happened? So the Mishkan was a sign that the Chet HaEgo is in our past. You know, so they defile it. Not true. It's not in your past. You're just fooling yourselves. Right? What else happened? Because the women didn't give in. They got Rosh Chodesh as a Yom Tov. I can't get into the whole depth of it right now. So what did the Greeks do? They legislate against Rosh Chodesh. Right? They're trying to erase, right, anything that represents that we made it past Chet HaEgo. We are still as cut off from God, not any better than they are. But Beso Zu Ishto, right? The fact that it's a Beis HaMikdash has, you know, as we said, also it alludes to intimacy. It goes a lot deeper than that. Because our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, a man-wife relationship. And like that Amora said, that Tana said, I never called my wife, I always called her my bias. Right? You know, the Beis HaMikdash, you know, is a truly, truly an act that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is, you know, in full intimacy with us over there. So not only do we have the inner dimension, but we are really deeply connected on that level, not just, you know, aware of it, deeply connected. And that's why, you know, all the agaditus about Chorban HaBayis are in Maseches Gittin, because Chorban HaBayis was cosmic divorce, right? Right? I mean, basically it represents being married. Being married to God, and where his wife, Beisel Zuishto, and the Beis HaMikdash represents, you know, the house that he lives with us, Knesset Yisrael, and it's called his house because Knesset Yisrael is there. So here's an amazing Maharal. And Stan, you know, what's happening. That the, you know, the Yevonim overtook the Heichal. Right? It says they made it into the Heichal. So says the Maharal like this. Heichal is Gematria 65. Yevon is Gematria 66. More than the Heichal. Right? So that's why they overtake the Heichal. As a word, they had a higher level than the Heichal. Right? Who drove them out? The Kohanim. Right? So he says, let's break it down. They found a jug of oil at the end of it all that had a stamp of the Kohen Gadol. Now what's special about the Kohen Gadol? He goes, Lifnai, the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which somehow they were oblivious to because it was off the, they weren't even able to see it. The Kedusha was too high. Right? So as there's a power of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, which we have no records of the Greeks ever going into, right, seemingly oblivious to it. And again, during the Second Temple period, there wasn't anything to see there, really, anyway. You know, there's no Aron. But, so Kohen Gadol goes lifnai v'lifnin, even, you know, where the Yevarim didn't reach. So listen to this Maharal. This is where it's a little bit, you know. So there's Kedusha in the Kodesh HaKadoshim. Right? And we know that Kedusha is represented by the letter 10, you know, number 10. Right, because that's when you have a minion, you could do Dvarim Shepa Kedusha. You can't say Kedusha or Dvarim Shepa Kedusha without 10. Right, and that's also represented by the letter Yud, which is Gematria 10. Like the Gemara says, Menachas God created the higher realms with the letter Yud. The lower realm, Olam Hazeh, created with the Hey, the higher realms with Yud. So Yud is connected to Kedusha. Right? So now, Heichal, the word, following? Word Heichal, right? If you wanted to not, you know, it's spelled with one Yud. But if you wanted to do away with the tseri that's beneath the hay, two dots beneath hay, you could do away with it, and you could spell it with two yuds, and it would be read phonetically the same. And right now, you could have read it heichol or hichol, right? And we know the correct nikud is heichol. Right? But if you wanted to spell it out in a way that there wouldn't be any mistake, you could with two yuds. And then you'll be forced to read Heichal. That means, says the Maharal, the fact that it's the Nikud is, you know, makes phonetically the sound of an extra Yud means there's a hidden Yud. And says the Maharal like this: the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim secretly permeates the Heichal. Right? If that is the Kedusha that secretly permeates Heichal is represented by the letter Yud, that bumps up the Gematria to 75, from Heichal 65 to 75. Gematria Kohen. Which is why the Kohanim, Chashan, were able to drive them out. What do you need this whole elaborate thing for? The Kohanim, because there's this secret Kedusha from the Kodesh HaKadoshim, that permeates the Heichal, and therefore it's 75, Heichal plus the hidden Kedusha, and that's Kohen. The Kohanim tap into that. They tap into the hidden inner demand that the Heichal secretively has the Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim within it also. And that's the correct way to view what happened was not the pshat that, you know, they conquered the Beis HaMikdash and we liberated it. That's not the correct way to look at it. The correct way to look at it is that the Beis HaMikdash spit them out. They were ejected. That's what the Maharal means. The correct way to view it is that temporarily they got a foothold, but then the Kedusha that's in the Kodesh HaKadoshim kicked in, and they were, and that's what he says, Kohen is Gematria Heichal plus the Yud of the representing the hidden Kedusha of the Kodesh HaKadoshim, saying that the Kohanim awakened a certain dormant power that puts the Gematria way above the 66 of Yavan, right? And it's to be viewed that the Beis HaMikdash spit them out. That's the correct way to look at it. Not that it was reconquered. They could never really sojourn there. They never really made it in. they never, and the Kohanim is to be viewed that the Kohanim awakened the hidden Kedusha and they were spit out. So Knesset Yisrael, you know, and the meter called Shechina cannot be conquered. Cannot be conquered. So what do you mean? Can't be conquered. But what happened in the days of Mordechai and Esther? We said the Shechina was there in Golis. So we said on the day of Purim you reveal that from captivity the Shechina rules the world. A. Right? But you can only see it, you can only see it once a year. Right? But then there's an aspect of the Kedusha that never gets conquered. Never. Right? We've gone into Golis only 200 years later. And they broke our bodies and they killed us and they persecuted us and they taxed us to death. Right? The amazing thing is that morally and intellectually, the Jews were always emancipated. It's amazing. It's amazing, you know. The Mishnah was written after Churban HaBayis and the Gemara. It was a very intellectually productive time. Not only that, much of our Chidushei Torah were produced in response to challenges that arose. That it's called that there's a spiritual victory. Right? Am Yisrael was never subjugated in spirit throughout this whole long Golis. And when he said, you convert or we'll kill you, we preferred to die. Preferred to die, Al-Kiddush Hashem. Straight through. They never beat us spiritually. You know who beat us spiritually? We self-destructed spiritually. Because when 200 years ago, and it was only 200 years ago, it's amazing, when we started looking at ourselves the way Goyim look at us, we started, well, it's called in psychology, they call it interjection, right? And that's what they call it, you know, when you integrate. You know, what other people think about you, that's what took a toll on us, you know, spiritually. You know? Well, starting with the Haskalah and the Reform and all the different Jewish cults that arose, it's all 200 years and it's all damage that we did to ourselves. All damage. The fact that most of the Jews today, unfortunately, are non-religious, that's something that's only less than 200 years old, that whole thing, right? And we did it to ourselves. The Goyim can't take us intellectually, spiritually. They break our bodies, can't break our souls, can't break our spirit. Right, the miracle of Hanukkah that Knesset Yisrael can never be conquered is that the spirit of Knesset Yisrael can never be conquered. And that's the difference between the menorah and the korbanos. You hear this very well. Right, the menorah, you know, represents the intellect. It says so in all the svarim. Like light, ner mitzvah v'torah represents light. Right. The korbanos represent eating, but eating b'kedusha b'tara. You know when the Mizbeach eats, we eat also. Also, it's korban Pesach, korban Shlomim, and even korban Chatas. The Kohanim eat it. The Mizbeach eats, we eat also. Not only that, you know, everyone knows Gemara and Brachos, so we don't have to overdo it, right? But the Gemara says that now we don't have a Beis HaMikdash, so Shulchan HaShadam Mechaper Olav, your Shulchan is your Mizbeach, and if you eat like a mensch, so that's like a korban, right? Right? The sacrificial order of the Beis HaMikdash represents, you know, like mealtime in the house. Right? So it's also part of, you know, family living. But it's mealtime, right? It represents, you know, the physical side of the domestic life. So korban olah, but I'm saying korban olah is just one out of the many korbanos. Many korbanos are eaten. But, right? And I say, when the Mizbeach eats, the Kohanim eat, also we eat. Korban Pesach, Korban Shlomim, Meiser Behema, you know, all the Kachim Kalim, Yisraelim eat also. Right? Eating, B'kdusha B'tara, of course it's a whole different eating when you're eating in your house, you're eating outdoors. Right? But the it represents the physical side of the wonderful domestic bliss that's there. But then there's the intellectual and pure spiritual side, and that's represented by light, just light, it's not tangible. Right? They did collateral damage. There was damage to the clay HaMikdash also, and the korbanos were recessed until they did proper renovations, right? and that took a while. There was no nes that the Mizbech was magically, you know, in a state of repair. They were not, you know, the Avoda didn't resume for a while. What resumed immediately, you know, was the nes of the Ner Chanukah, because the revelation was a very, very, you know, partial revelation, right? That, you know, they can never conquer the Shechina intellectually. The intellect and the spirit, they can never conquer. The aspect of Gilui Shechina that there is in the Korbanos, which is the more physical, as the trickle down to the physical, that yes. That yes. And the miracle was Dafka in the Shemen, right? And in the Neros, because that was the permanent effect that Hanukkah had. Permanent liberation of the spirit. Spirit never goes into Golos. So even though from a geopolitical, as far as a political victory, you know, didn't last very long. Like Esther pointed out, full freedom, few dicks say, yeah, whatever. You know, and the Chorban HaBayis, you know, the temple, you know, went just 200 years later. Spit in the bucket of history. We're in Golos 10 times that amount of time. The miracle of Hanukkah was not the victory was, the lasting effect was the spiritual. And that explains a very cryptic medrash. A medrash in Parshas Baaloscha. Right, Rashi quotes part of it. Right, Rashi doesn't quote all of it. That Aaron was, you know, upset. Right? That, you know, he didn't participate in the Chanukah HaMishkan. So everyone knows Rashi quotes only part of the medrash and says, well, I'm consoling you, you get the menorah. But the medrash goes on and says, and not only that, the menorah is better than the korbanos, because the korbanos are only bisman shebeis hamikdash kayim, right? But the menorah le'olam elmul pnei menorah ya'iru shivas neros, the menorah burns forever. Who did the mitzvah of menorah ever since the beis hamikdash was destroyed? Right? It refers to that you know, so the Sforim say that secretively wherever the menorah is, it's burning, right? But what it means for us is that, yes, the korbanos, which is the physical side of the bias, right, they're able to take down, right? But the spiritual side of the bias, spiritually, we never went into goals. Spiritually. So the light is there. The menorah always burns, even when the base matrix is not standing. So it's the bias ejected them, but it ejected them vis-a-vis the neros. The Vitimu Kol Ashmanim pushed back. That aspect pushed back and set a precedent, they can't take us. And that's the Nes of Yehudis. The Jewish woman that represents the Shechina, that represents the Midah of Knesset Yisrael, right? That represents the bias, i.e. the Beis HaMikdash, cut the guy's head off. That's the point, cut his head off. But it comes to the head. No one takes us. Cut his head off, right? We're ahead. Head.
You know, I just thought, like, right. So Mary Yehudis, Esau's head was in the Marcel.
Yes. That's very interesting. Wow. Interesting. Right. Esther represents Am Yisrael being captured, but from captivity you rule the world. Right? Hanukkah represents they can never capture us, you know, spiritually and morally. Right? The head. Cut his head off. Right? Made him headless. We have the head. You don't take our head. Take your head. Right. She didn't have to be defiled. She, you know, it's a total victory, but only when it comes to issues of the spirit. Right. And that's the permanent effect that Hanukkah has. And that's why Yaakov took on the angel. He didn't take up Esau in a body. Because Maisa of a similar bottom. He knew that he's saying, laying down the precedence and the future of Jewish history. Right? So you kick the backside of their archangel, which is their spiritual power. You know, in spirit, in the spirit, they can never take us. Because you have to understand that when we sin, they have a claim on us. As I say, Vaya Kashet Torid, Ufarakta Ulam Me'atzvercha. Yeah, Yitzchak tells Esav, whenever he sins, you know, you'll break his yoke. But you have to precedent and set up, all right, sins give them stock in what? Yaakov says, I'm going to side. Sins will give them stock in our bodies, but not in our souls. That's why when it comes up against the Malach, he creams them, right? right? But I, Esav, you know, when we do averus, he has a koach. The koach will only be in body. So Esav in body, he bows to, right? Esav in spirit, he creams. Say at the present that if he'll have koach because of our sins, it'll only be to subjugate us in body, but not to subjugate us in soul. And now you understand the amazing connection. Now that women, that what Hanukkah has to do with the house, right? And the special connection women have to Hanukkah. They, even though the story of Yehudis didn't happen perhaps during the time of Hanukkah, most definitely represents the spirit of Hanukkah, right? Right? That the regarding the spirit, regarding the head, right? They can never take us. She cuts his head off, right? But it represents Knesset Yisrael. That, you know, Esther represents Knesset Yisrael in captivity. Yehudis represents Knesset Yisrael. That when it comes to issues of the spirit, i.e., the head, cut their head off. Right? It's in the spirit of Hanukkah. Represents the spirit of Hanukkah, total victory, but regarding issues of the spirit and the intellect. But an amazing thing happened, but only on the spiritual level, not on the physical level. Right? That we know that Chazal tell us. That if not for Cheta Egel, right, it would have been Mekuyam V'shachanti B'socham, literally. Right. The fact that it's only in a cordoned off, purified, sterile area is because we're tainted because of Cheta Egel. But nonetheless, that was better than nothing. Shows that somehow, you know, we got past Cheta Egel on a certain level, but not totally. That the Shekhinah is in a cordoned off area, not everywhere. And so now the Yevonim tried to push that down. The base mission that represent Kiso Keren Ashor, right? Chet Ego, come back. You're not special. You're not more connected to God than we are. Keren Ashor, don't be so proud. You did Chet Ego. Right, the base mission represents you got past it. We're defiling the base Hamikdash, right? Rosh Chodesh represents that you got past it. That's why it's the holiday for the women who weren't Nichshol, right? We're abolishing Rosh Chodesh, right? Comes Hanukkah. In the backlash against the Yevonim, in the comeback, that, as it were, you have to view it that the Heichal naturally eject, the Kohanim awakened the hidden Kedusha of the Heichal, that the Heichal, as it were, naturally ejects them. Not that it was reconquered. They were ejected. They never dug in over there in the first place, just like Yehudis was never defiled, right? Never dug in there in the first place, right? So in the backlash, now every house is a Beis HaMikdash. Ner Ishu Beiso. Every house is like the Beis HaMikdash. That's why this is Ner Ishu Beiso. That's on the household and it's on the house. But only spiritually, only as far as the lights. We don't have korbanos. Spiritual victory, as it were, there's like we even get on a higher level, partial recovery from the Cheta Ego on the menorah level, not on the korbanos level. That every house is a Beis HaMikdash. Every house has that holy inner space. Right, and we light the candles. Right, that the light has to be on the door. You know, not even within three tefachim on the door. Even though in halacha generally three tefach is called negligible space, in Hanukkah that's not the halacha. It has to be on the door within one tefach because it's the light of the house. The light of the house, sending influence out. That the light, the Torah that's on the inside is going to be mashpia, moral value or lagoyim outside, but it's the light of the house. Body outside. And because of the pushback, we gained the madriga that every house on a spiritual, purely spiritual, right, is like the Beis HaMikdash. On the pure, just on the level of the spirit, you know, of course, korbanos are still only in the Beis HaMikdash. And that explains the secret why there's no din of Sudas Mitzvah on Hanukkah. Mm-hmm. On a deeper level, you say, because it was a spiritual victory. No, because the triumph was a spiritual triumph. You know, every house now is like a Beis HaMikdash, but only as far as Neros, not as far as Korbanos. As it were, you know, we didn't restore the divine eating. That's why there's no Sudas Mitzvah. On Purim, on that one day a year, you could see how the Shekhinah is in full control from captivity. So since it reveals full control on that one day, there's a din of Sudas Mitzvah on Purim. Right? But it's only on that day because you see the special revelation that the Shekhinah will rule the world from captivity. Mamash rule the world. Right? You see it on Purim. You see, it's in full control, so you even have Sudas Mitzvah. Hanukkah is only a partial victory, only of the spirit. So every Jewish home is a Beis HaMikdash only vis-a-vis the candles. not vis-a-vis the korbanos. That's why there's no din, suras mitzvah, on Hanukkah. All right? Okay, do we answer all questions?
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Still being taxed.
Exactly the way it
right.
But you know what's an interesting thing? I started the class, I didn't get to the answer to this question, but maybe it's part of what you can bring it in.
Yeah.
Is that when the Jews were spiritually threatened on Hanukkah,
right.
I mean, in that time period, they responded by acting in war. When they were threatened on Purim,
right.
They responded by prayer.
Right.
It's sort of an interesting
inverse, correct? Right. Yeah, the Chafetz Chaim makes note of the inverse. Interesting inverse, correct?
And so, would your answer?
Yes.
Would it apply that because we had no real threat of spiritually being destroyed, except we have to show we are willing to die for
yes,
that?
Yes, correct. It's
physical
yes, absolutely, absolutely. Not only that, the Chafetz Chaim says exactly what you're saying. The Chafetz Chaim said exactly what you're saying, that, you know, when you...
I heard the question posed in class, it wasn't my idea.
Yeah, so the Chafetz Chaim says that exactly, that when it's a spiritual threat, you have to show Mesiras Nefesh. Spiritual threat, you have to demonstrate Mesiras Nefesh. And that's why the Chafetz Chaim held very strongly, it's recorded, that Jews should just take pitchforks, kitchen knives, and charge communist, atheistic Russia. Just go and charge. You know, spiritual threat, you take up arms, whatever you have. So his co-Rosh Hashiva of Moshe Landinsky has a Rebbe, they'll mow us, they have machine guns, they'll mow us down at the border. It's about Mesiras Nefesh, right? To bring down new Kedusha only comes down with Mesiras Nefesh. That's correct. That's, okay, I look like Hanukkah. Okay.